welcome to Haunt Weekly.
Everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return once again, happy Monday to all of those, not Monday to us as we record this, because we are coming from the past!
Yeah, I think people have figured that out.
That by very nature, we have to have recorded this in the past.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of like the Mitch Hedberg joke when everyone says, this is a picture of me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, of course it was. It's a photograph. And it's like, show me a picture of when you're older. And I'll be like, damn, let me see that camera.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, this is a podcast from the past. All right. But if you want more podcasts from further back in our past, you can do so at our website at hauntweekly.com. We are Haunt Weekly on Twitter and Facebook. And tinyurl.com/hauntweekly will take you to our YouTube channel where you can get all the podcasts from our past. All 125 episodes, not counting this one.
Obviously.
Obviously, because this one's not up yet.
Exactly.
We record this, will be available for your perusal. So definitely check us out at those locations. Feel free to subscribe, like, and share, and do all those wonderful things.
Yes.
Well, this week we're talking villains.
Yes.
And that's an exciting topic for us. We like our villains. So we're doing an entire episode on Disney villains. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I think you are wrong.
Show notes up.
Though, you know, Disney's not a bad place to look at villains.
Not in some of their movies.
Some of their movies.
Some of them, it gets a little more dubious. But yes, we're talking about villains this week, specifically how to create a good haunt villain for your haunt. I was going to say haunt villain, but no, these guidelines create a good villain anywhere, actually.
Exactly.
So whether you're a novelist or, you know, a filmmaker or whatever and want to create a villain, a lot of these guidelines work there as well. So how to create a villain for your haunt rather than a haunt villain.
Right.
Makes sense?
It does.
But on that note, we do have to do conference reminders to let you guys know that we've
what's
been
going on
multiple times. This is a lot of y'all's favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
So, on that note, it's
how many of you just naff off after the conference reminders?
I don't
want to know.
Actually, we don't know, and we don't want to know because we've got your downloads. Screw you. You've already been counted. All right. But on that note, everyone, it's an even episode. That means I take this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, coming up May 18th through the 20th in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Halloween Show and National Haunters Convention presents Halloween Boardwalk Empire at the Showboat Convention Center, featuring zombie volleyball, a Hearst show, and a Mardi Gras themed costume ball, plus much more. Learn all the details at HalloweenShow.com.
Then May 25th through the 27th in Columbus, Ohio, it's Midwest Haunters Convention at the Greater Columbus Convention Center, featuring a masquerade party and a zombie walk, pre-convention bus tour with 8 haunts, including Lessons in Fear.
But including, sorry.
Yes. Lessons in Fear, Ohio State Reformatory, Rotten Manor, St. Lucifer Scream Park, Erebus, and more. Also stops in hell for ice cream.
Well, hell, Michigan.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think it was understood. Midwest Haunters Convention.com. They're not actually taking them to literal.
Yeah, they're not taking them to New Jersey, okay? My apologies to all of our listeners from New Jersey.
Yeah.
But you kind of knew that joke was coming, probably.
Maybe.
All right. June 22nd and the 23rd in Ulster Park, New York, is the premier haunted attractions tour and education series. At the Super 8 Kingston, there will be a tour of the Headless Horseman and all 7 of its attractions. Full itinerary is TBA. I just checked today. This is of May 29th. Learn more details at premierhaunttour.com.
All right, July 14th and 15th in Ocala, Florida, at Southeast Halloween Enthusiast Convention. It is going to be at the 2300 Southwest 17th Road, Ocala, Florida.
Yeah, there's no name for that building. It's just there's a building.
Is it a building or is it just a field? Is it just an address?
No, there is an actual building there. I've looked it up on Google Maps. There is an actual building. And it's not even a building. It is built. And it's been finished. It is a built.
Okay. Anyway, it'll be featuring a ghost walk tour and a costume ball. You can find out more at sehec.com. That's SEHEC.com.
All right. July 27th through 29th in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the Room Escape Conference and Tour in the Music City Center. They'll be touring up to 8 different escape games. Now here, I looked this one up today. Like I said, I did the conference reminders update today. I did kind of out of cycle. There are actually, you take one of two sets of tours. Either tour will get you in 4 attractions, 2 on each night. So you go, like the A tour, you do these 4, and the B tour, you do these 4.
Right.
All right. And just a list of some of them, including I picked the top 2 from each, the first 2 from each one. Live Minds Adventure Escape Game, Escape Point, Locked Murfreesboro, and Extreme Escape Games.
You just wanted to say extreme.
Yeah, I did. I'm not even going to pretend that's not true. ECWs.
Yeah.
Anyways, learn more at roomescapeshow.com.
Okay, July 28th through the 29th in Long Beach, California, it's Midsummer Scream. It's going to be at the Long Beach Convention Center. Features dozens of on-site haunted attractions and experiences, as well as a Screaming Room film festival. MidsummerScream.org for more info.
I don't know what's so special about a Screaming Room. My college had one around exam time every year in the library.
Yeah.
Anyways. After that, on July 30th, just a one-day thing, Seasonal Attraction and Leadership Symposium 2018 will be in Long Beach, California at the Queen Mary Hotel, which we just covered in the news.
Yes.
They will be renting out their most haunted room.
Right. So, if you're going there for Midsummer Scream, because they're in the same city, and they're just one day apart, you could stick around for the extra day if you wanted to check out this symposium.
Yeah, I don't think that's coincidence.
I don't think so either. I think that was probably smart booking.
It was intentional booking.
Yes, intentional booking.
More on with that. It is put on by the Haunted Attractions Network, owned by Ganta Media. There will be 6 keynotes, though the speakers are still TBA. And there'll be Q&A/discussion sessions after the fact. There's going to be a jam-packed day. Learn more at hauntedattractionnetwork.com. They have a link to the symposium at the very top, though it's not up to date there. So realistically, go to their Facebook page. That's where the real deets are right now.
Yeah.
But still, the hauntedattractionnetwork.com, that's where all that is.
All right.
Well, okay, I think we got through that without falling on our face too hard.
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
Now for the main part. The main course.
Oh, I thought we were done.
No, that was just the appetizer.
All right, but anyways, we're talking about villains today. And this was a topic that actually has come up a couple of times around here in general, because we're always looking for ways to improve our storytelling.
Right.
And to us, and to many of you, I know haunting is a storytelling medium.
It is.
Now, storytelling mediums need conflict.
Yeah.
You need something. And of course, as we all know from our days in English class, there's only so many types of conflicts you can have. And the most common and the most easiest narrative is hero versus villain. Good guy versus bad guy.
Yeah.
Face versus heel, if you will. It's a very classic thing, because we're not doing like man versus nature or man versus self in a haunt. What do you think of the other 2 conflicts that commonly come up?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think there's a 4th, but I already forgot it, and it doesn't really matter. We're doing hero versus villain, because that's what we do in haunts most of the time anyways. Now, here's the thing. You need to have a haunt villain, so you have to ask yourself the immediate question, who's playing the hero in this story? Who is the good guy in the story of hero versus villain? And the answer is the customer.
Yeah.
They are the hero. Now, this was something that came up at HauntCon.
Right.
Who was it that said it? You mentioned it before.
Oh, Margie Kerr.
Margie Kerr said it.
She's been on.
Yeah, she's been on. I could not... Okay, we've had several people from HauntCon on. Several women from HauntCon on.
Yes.
To be unable to remember which one. That's actually a good thing. It's a good sign.
Yes. It was episode 114.
Yes. But she talked about this, and basically one of the reasons people go through haunted attractions is because they want to feel like they've conquered something. They've defeated something. They've right. emerged stronger. And it's also one of the reasons people go in groups.
Yes.
Is to have this shared, I wouldn't say traumatic experience, but same experience of overcoming something, of beating something.
It's almost like a coming-of-age story told yeah. over and over.
It is. But groups do it. Even, like, older groups will do it to yeah. have that bonding experience, to have that moment.
Right.
Where they all came together and overcame something, basically.
Right. They survived.
So, in this story, while they may not conquer, but they will survive. They will defeat the villain, whether it's a him, her, or them.
Right.
Because you can't have multiple villains in one case, or groups of villains. Like a yeah. family can be a villain in this case. They thwart their plans merely by getting out the other side. You know, the carefully planned exit with the exit lighting sign.
Yes, yes. And the safe walkway to it.
The safe walkway to it. It's yeah. at least 36 inch wide. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But merely by doing it, they have conquered.
Exactly.
I'm really sucking the air out of my own theories here.
Well, but it's true, because I have seen kids run through our haunt, not see a damn thing.
Or get a damn scare.
Yeah, come out the other side.
We did it!
We did it! Woo! I hear them celebrating.
We made it!
From inside, yeah.
You didn't do anything, you just...
It's like, you just ran, which is against the rules.
Yeah, we had like 5 rules, and you broke all of them, basically, yeah. on the way out. Good job.
Yeah.
We have basically 5 rules that pertain to your behavior in the haunt.
Yeah.
And you broke nearly all of them.
Yeah.
Good job. Go team.
Yep.
But anyways, yes. But that is the thing. That feeling of conquering, that feeling of defeating something is very, very important. Now... then comes the question, what do we give them to conquer? Is it just the haunt itself? Of course, that's a big part of it.
Right.
Your brand, your name, you know, hey, we did, you know, the House of Shock. We did the Mortuary. We did Erebus. We did whatever.
Yep.
We made it through. We did it.
Right.
That's a big thing. But also, you can give them a villain to conquer. A character to conquer. And that is what we're talking about now.
Right.
Now, we are going to talk about this from the perspective of a haunted attraction. I know. Big surprise. We may take that approach with this.
Yeah.
But that means that we're going to be kind of developing the character a little bit backwards.
Right.
Because this is... because even though... and it's very interesting. You actually search this online. And I'm going to try to put some of the links in the show notes. But I ended up reading a whole bunch of guides on creating villains, which had some great suggestions that I included. Mm-hmm. But like I said, there was like a dozen different sites, and I got a million things from everywhere, basically, is what it came down to. And a lot of the lists had overlapping information. But it was all geared at novel writers and filmmakers.
Yeah.
Not at haunters. And so a lot of those tips, while very, very good, are kind of ancillary things for us. Because we're not building a character you're going to spend hundreds of pages with, or you know, nearly an hour of screen time with.
No. In a lot of cases, it's just a few minutes.
Even if it's that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've seen, like, Terror on the Coast. Their villain was inside the haunt, and we only saw him for 15 seconds?
Yeah.
30 seconds?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that you don't get to spend a lot of time with your customers inside the haunt.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that in more detail. But yeah, you have to be prepared to have villains that kind of come out of the box hot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's where we're, that's the angle we're approaching it. So in terms of building our villain backwards.
Right.
The first thing to think about is going to be the villain's name. Okay, now, as far as I'm concerned, the name of your villain has to be 3 things. First, it must be distinctive. There must be no names like it that you're aware of that are similar or confusing or could be muddled with.
Right.
Second, it must be easy to remember and say. It must be something that people can talk to each other about.
Yeah.
For example, if you're in a group, imagine, for example, there's a group of people going through your haunt. One of them has read your story and your backstory and paid attention to everything.
Right.
And their friends have not.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to relay, you know, the information about your villain and the story while you're waiting in line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's Thraxamazog, making my tick jokes here.
Yeah.
If it's Senor Thraxamazog, it's not going to work very well.
Right.
Because they can't communicate that quickly or easily or comfortably. It has to be something that can be trivially communicated. And the third thing is, and this is part of that, is it has to be marketable. It has to look good in print. Mm-hmm. It has to be short enough to fit on a flyer comfortably.
Yeah.
It has to be something you can put out there comfortably and easily.
Yeah, and I cannot count the number of times, well, probably 13, because this will be our, well, 12, because this will be our 13th season, reporters have asked, will we meet so-and-so, the named villain for that year?
Yes.
And the answer is, of course.
Duh.
Or maybe you'll have to come and see.
The answer is yes.
We've already told you he's going to be there. He's all over all of the marketing.
Yeah, and we kind of do this one a little weird in that
we
have the main villain, the overarching villain, is Bernie Baxter.
Right.
He is the carny. He is the guy that's front of house. He's leading you in. And he's bringing with him these... I don't want to say secondary villains, because they're actually the lead villains of the year.
Right. Yeah, I see Bernie as more of the host. He is hosting an event to showcase this extreme evil that he's brought back.
Exactly. That's well put.
Demon.
That's well put.
Yeah.
He is the recurring villain.
Right.
That kind of introduces the main villain of the year.
Yeah.
The villain du jour, if you will.
Exactly.
And we do enjoy having it that way, because it gives us, gives us a character that we can keep investing and keep growing year over year over year.
Right. And it's recognizable every year.
And people recognize the fuck out of Bernie.
Yeah.
I really was not sure that would work well long term. Even though we put his face on the flyer,
right.
I wasn't really sure people would recognize him, but they do.
Yeah.
It's very, very weird. And especially as we've gotten on, later, like the first years, the most common question is, who are you again? People talking about.
Yeah.
And now it's, are you Bernie?
Yeah.
No. Yes. Anyways. But yeah. Now, here's a tip I've learned for creating names for your villain and for any character in general, but for villains, this is especially important. Consider writing down a list of potential names you're thinking about. And then shut it up, put it away, and forget about it for a few days, a week, whatever, a few weeks, whatever. And then see which of the names you remember after that time. If you have 12 names in that list, you're only going to remember one or two.
Yeah.
I almost guarantee you. Unless you were like, you know, got a photographic memory, which doesn't exist, or something, you're only going to remember a couple of those names. Those names you remember are the ones you start with.
Right.
And you work from there. Beyond that, focus group it with your friends, your family, customers, anyone who will listen, people you mug on the street. I recommend chloroform for the mugging. turns out to work really well. But yeah, basically what you want to do... Please don't chloroform people.
Don't do that. That is not a recommendation.
But in all seriousness, do try to get the name out there and see what other people think. And the reason to that is simple. Remember, when you actually pick the name and you start marketing it and you start getting it out there and you start storytelling with it, you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
Even if everything else about that character is bang on, you don't get to change the name until you get rid of the character.
Exactly.
You can't, like, imagine for a second if we decided Bernie Baxter needed a name change. We're hosed, man.
Yeah, that's pretty much our brand gone away.
Yeah, that's everything. That's everything we've worked on for 13 years down in the toilet, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so hopefully by the end of this, you've got a relatively marketable name.
Mm-hmm.
Next is to focus on his appearance. And the appearance...
Or her.
Or his, or... Yeah, okay.
I know. We're using his in the
roles. I know, but that's just it. And that's one of the things that's complicated. Because not only is it a his or her, but a them.
Or a thing.
Or a thing. Exactly. It could be any... I mean, that's just it. It's not just even a gender thing. It's...
Right.
It's anything. You could have a dragon.
If
you
can
make it distinctive enough and follow all these rules. It could be a dragon. It could be a goat. It could be... I would love to see a haunt with a goat as a villain, for the record. I think that would be awesome.
I'm pretty sure that that's been done.
Terror goat.
That sounds like a great garbage horror.
It does. I want to watch this movie now. But yes, villain appearance. Their appearance must be unique and easy to spot at a distance. If I can't look at this person and tell within an eighth of a second or less who they are, game over.
Yep.
It is literally over. And the way to do that is not only to make them distinctive, but make them distinctive within your haunt.
Right.
Like, for a good example, once again, going back, and we're going to use our own haunt as an example a lot in this, because this is an area we do work on a great deal, because we don't have a lot of money, we don't have a lot of space, we don't have a lot of...
All we've got is our storytelling ability.
All we've got is our story and characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the things we do is Bernie is dressed up as a carny barker.
Right.
That is never the theme inside the haunt.
No.
We have never done a carny, never will.
No.
Because then you wouldn't be able to distinguish Bernie from all the other people.
Right.
So, it has to be distinguishable not just on the street, which is important, obviously, because if he's just dressed in street clothes and looks like your customers, mm-hmm. that's a problem too. But it has to be distinguishable from the people inside your haunt.
Right. And I would say that if you're going to have your main villain inside the haunt, like the last room, make it the set design completely different from the rest of the haunt.
Yeah.
So that you've got audio cues, you've got visual cues, you've got, you know, smells that increase that, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
This is the big deal.
This person has to stand out immediately. So you have to craft a distinct character from this. And the best way to do that, I have found, is to craft a distinct feature.
Yeah.
That your visitors can see. And it can be a facial characteristic. Are they really old?
Right.
Do they have one eye missing?
Yeah.
You know, are they red face, like complete, like stark red, or blue or green or some other color?
Yeah.
You know, like the Klingons in Star Trek Discovery, and they look like that.
Yeah.
You know, are they obviously, you know, somehow deformed?
Well, yeah. I'm just thinking, because you brought up Klingons, and their appearance has changed so much, so many times, it's confusing to tell whether or not people are Klingons anymore.
I actually agree with that. Another option is a physical characteristic. Are they really tall?
Yeah.
Are they really short? Do they have four arms and four legs? Do they?
Are they a spider?
Are they a spider goat?
Yeah.
I'm hung up on goats now, okay?
Apparently.
We're all in on goats.
Okay.
Second, next up, do they have a distinct item of clothing? With Bernie, this is where Bernie works, by the way.
Right.
Long coat, usually a bright color.
Yeah.
With the tails. And we just got a brand new coat for Bernie. I'm really excited about it. It's a bright red coat with tails that go down to my ankles. I'm in danger of tripping on them, actually. We might have to take him up a little bit.
Yeah.
And a giant top out.
Yep.
You can spot that 100 yards away, no problem. But basically, you have to make it something that people can look at immediately and recognize. And it has to look nothing like villains on TV or movies.
Right.
Don't say your villains... like Michael Myers, but...
yeah.
Like but Jason, no. but... it doesn't work. You have to come up with something that's unique to you if you want this to be your villain. And then there are other aspects of the appearance that you can meddle with and have fun with. There are mannerisms. Do they, you know, hold their hands a certain way? Do they wiggle about a certain way? You know, do they do a certain sign?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want clues on that, I know we keep saying watch professional wrestling, but professional wrestling is filled with these types of mannerisms.
They are.
Wrestlers have, like, signs and symbols. They get, like, they would look like gang signs if they weren't done in a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
Things like that can be very distinctive. Speech patterns, their voice, are they gravelly? Do they speak, you know, very slowly and methodically? Do they speak... with a deep voice? Do they speak with a high voice? You know what I mean?
Also, what century is their language choice from?
Yeah. Where's their language coming from? Are they speaking very proper English from 200 years ago?
Right.
Or are they speaking, you know, redneckese from today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are they speaking? How are they talking? How do they walk?
Mm-hmm.
A walk can be super important.
Yes. Because you could have a limp. You could have someone crawling on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, you can enhance the creepiness just by the walk.
You could have someone doing a cocky walk. You can have someone doing, you know, like a high step walk even.
Right.
You can, and even things that seem like they might be silly, if you attach it to the right character, they can work.
Right. Yeah, like last year I had the character of Miss Paisley.
Mm-hmm.
She was a librarian and she wore boots, so I did a lot of stomping. And I was very angry at the boots.
Yes.
Yes.
And Bernie has a tendency, I admit, to kind of walk with spaghetti legs.
Yeah.
He's a showman. He's always jimmying and jiving, for example.
Yeah.
It's a very different style of walking.
It is.
But it says very different things about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Also, do they have a signature catchphrase and or gesture? This goes back to the mannerisms.
Right.
But do they have a thing they do or say? What does the Red Queen say in Alice in Wonderland?
Off with her head.
Yeah. What does every Bond villain say? Some variation of, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die."
Yeah.
You know, every villain has their catchphrase or saying. Don't use those, but come up with your own. Something that they say. And, you know, with Miss Paisley was a good example. It was, "This is wrong," was basically the thing. Every story was wrong.
Yeah.
And it actually worked really well. People were leaving talking about that.
Yeah, well, they were asking me what was wrong with the books. A couple of smart-ass kids asked me what was wrong.
The stories are wrong, yeah.
Or, you know, what book is it? It's The Law.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
From the hella dark category.
That happened a couple of times.
I can imagine it did, actually. That makes a lot of sense that would happen.
Well, that's what the little smart-ass boys got, was that it's the law. Because they came through once and were too scared to, like, say it before they got out of the room. So I had it, if they came back, I had it ready.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, the main thing here is to try and make sure that your villain can be quickly recognized and is very distinctive.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that they can tell your villain apart from the other baddies in your haunt.
Mm-hmm.
And from the baddies in line and from everyone else, but also the other baddies in all of movie history.
Right.
So yeah, the main thing is you want something to be very, very distinctive. And the key way to do that, that I have found, is to make the appearance be over the top. And this is something our industry actually does really, really well. We've actually figured this out. Going back to, like, with Bernie and the Carney Barker, he doesn't just have a coat with tails.
Right.
He has this bright red coat with tails to the floor.
Yeah.
He doesn't just have a top hat. He has, like, a super comically large top hat.
Yeah.
Which, A, has to be super comically large, because I have a big goddamn head, and I'm wearing a big goddamn mask. The only top hats that fit are comically oversized.
This is very true.
How many times have we gone top hat shopping?
Plenty. You also have a cane.
Yes, the cane.
And this is the thing, is that... So your outfit has pretty much stayed the same.
Yes.
And this is the first time the coat's going to be a really bright color.
Yes.
But your face, your mask has changed 4-5 times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the first year...
Oh, fuck hell. All right. This is confession time, boys and girls. We're gonna pull an aside here and sit by the fireplace that you can't see and we don't have.
Yeah, exactly.
And talk about this, because the very first year we opened, when we did it in 2005, we were doing it in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina here in New Orleans.
Right.
We were making do with whatever we had. And we had the idea for the character of Bernie.
Right.
And we had actually hashed out a lot of these details about him beforehand.
Yeah.
And we went to go find the mask, and unfortunately we didn't have any Halloween stores nearby.
Right. And in fact, most of the stores that were open did not have their Halloween
at all.
At all.
Like, you couldn't go to, like, Walmart and get Halloween. You couldn't go to, like, Home Depot now is right. legend for Halloween.
Yeah.
You couldn't get in. There was no Halloween at Home Depot.
They didn't have anything anywhere because the timing hit at such a way that the trucks late, could not get in.
It was late August. Was when Hurricane Katrina hit, and through all of September, nothing arrived.
Yeah, well, and things still weren't open.
Yeah. What we did is we had found, I think one of the Walmarts got part of their Halloween section.
I think it was Walgreens, actually.
It might have been. I don't remember which it was. But we ended up finding an old witch's mask, an old lady witch mask. $5 witch mask. And we looked at it and go, this is androgynous enough to make it work. And it was. You put it on, had the big hook nose, and you put a top hat on it and a cane and everything. Yep. It looked like a dude, and we ran with it. And, yeah, we got rid of that mask at first opportunity.
Right. And it's been an old man mask ever since.
Yeah, it's been one of the various old man masks ever since. And those, you can't tell the difference between nearly as much. They all look like just generally old wrinkled dude.
Yeah.
Like we've
That's how they read.
Yeah, we've been trying to talk. We talked repeatedly about trading up to like an FX mask or something.
Right.
But it just hasn't been necessary.
No.
And the money hasn't been justified given our budget. But anyways, when doing this, where the hell were we in these notes?
Yeah, I know.
When doing this, be careful to avoid stereotypes, though. And I mean stereotypes both in terms of real-world stereotypes. You don't want to, like, play to the foreign heel or whatever.
Right.
But you also don't want to play to stereotypes in movies.
No.
So be careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
Make something that is, you know, you're going to have to involve tropes. Tropes are a thing, and learning the difference between tropes and stereotypes is important. But, yeah, don't give in to just following stereotypes. All right, so now we come to the lengthier part of the show, which is creating the actual villain character. Well, first I'll direct everyone to episode number 15, which was called Baby Got Backstory, where we talked about creating a backstory for your haunt. Mm-hmm. I know that is an eternity ago. I know the podcast sucked then. It sucks now, but it sucked then, too.
Yes. Back on Mitch, huh?
Yes. It's a Mitch Hedberg kind of night. What do you want out of me? But yes, so that has some great information that you should definitely check out. But when it comes to creating a villain, and like I said, this comes from pulling together an ungodly number of pages and lists.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about this, there are six keys that it seems like everyone agrees on. And the first key, and so we're going to put the six keys to remember about creating a villain. First, the villain must believe he, she, they are the good guys. Or gals. Or team. Whatever. They got to believe they're good, basically. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. And whatever backstory you give them has to offer them a reason to feel justified in their actions.
Right.
This is extremely important because a lot of novels and a lot of movies fall flat on this.
Mm-hmm.
Where they'll have a hero, they'll tell the full story, and it's super complicated, and they have this big, long arc, and they're super detailed, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and the villain's just evil incarnate.
Yeah.
You know, it's 627 from Lilo and Stitch. Anyone who gets that joke, you're my new friend. You may add me on Facebook.
You can do that anyway.
You can do that anyway, but I will definitely add you if you know why that joke is funny. But yeah, they are basically, they're very evil incarnate. They don't need a backstory. No, nobody goes through life thinking that they are the villain.
Right.
That is a very important thing to remember. So why are they doing it? What is their justification? Is it revenge?
Mm.
Is it response to some perceived transgression? Is it a blind drive to do some greater good? You always hear about the mad scientists, for example. They don't think of themselves as mad scientists that are doing evil and torturing people. No, they're trying to find a cure for this disease. They're trying to find immortality or save their life.
Increase evolution.
Yeah.
Increase the speed of it so that we can have better humans.
Yeah. They always have some quote-unquote greater good they're striving for. What is the greater good that the villain uses to justify their actions?
Because
Because simply put, villains do not think of themselves as evil, ever. No. If your villain goes, I'm evil.
Yeah.
They're not a villain. They're just cardboard.
Yeah. I suppose that's true enough.
You know, you have to find a way to make the villain believe that they are a good guy. And part of that does mean they can be kind at times, too. They don't have to always be a villain.
Right.
They can show compassion at moments. They can do things which seems like they shouldn't do because they're a villain.
Yeah.
And you see this in literature all the time. Professor Moriarty, for example, mm-hmm. at times showed compassion in the Sherlock Holmes movies. And Sherlock Holmes movies. Books. Yeah. Books, kids. Books. Sherlock Holmes was a book. He wasn't always Robert Downey Jr., okay?
Well, yeah. That's not even your favorite.
No, it isn't. So. But anyways, Jeremy Brett is the real Sherlock Holmes. Fight me. But anyways. So yes, think about that. Next. They must be as three-dimensional and as human, or human-esque, as the heroes. Mm-hmm. Basically, they have to share traits with the hero, in this case, the customer. But those traits must be misdirected. How would you describe your customers? Think about the people coming through your haunt on average. What traits do they possess? The kind traits, the good traits, the traits you admire in them. Are they loyal to their area? Are they family loyal? Are they, you know, super driven to succeed? What are their positive traits? Now imagine a villain that takes those traits and goes in the left field with them, misdirects with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking that a lot of our customers are kids and mm-hmm. teenagers.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of curiosity.
Yeah.
I would say that that's a good trait. Yes, they could be twisted very easily.
So it's easy to imagine a mad scientist who's so curious to find out the way life works.
Right.
That they take it to that obscene level.
Exactly.
You can play with that that way, for example. That's just an off-the-cuff example of it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have the same traits as a hero, but are misdirected. And once again, going back to Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes, they were both super intelligent, they were both trying to make the world a better place, but Moriarty had a very different vision of what a better world meant than Sherlock.
Right.
And he went off in that left field. So yes, basically the goal here is to make it believable that anyone with the same set of powers could become this villain.
Yeah.
Okay, we all can't become Thanos from Infinity Wars or from the Avengers or whatever. We can't all become, you know, Venom or Dr. Octopus or whatever. We all can't become them. But if we had those powers,
mm-hmm.
could we? Could you see yourself being tempted and lured that way?
Right.
If the answer is yes, you got a compelling villain.
Yeah.
You got something much more compelling. Because the best villains are about the evil within us all and our capacity to do harm to others and our capacity to do harm to the world when motivated. That's a tough thing to get, I admit. But if you can do that, you've got a villain that will stick with people long after they leave your haunt.
Yeah.
The villains, number three, mm-hmm. the villains must have motives and goals. Goals are what the villain wants. The goal is, I want a bajillion dollars. I want the king, the throne to England.
I want to finish my collection.
Yeah, I want to finish this collection, whatever. The motive is why they want those goals.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they want a bajillion dollars? Why do they want the throne? Why do they want to finish the collection of skulls?
Yeah.
Why do they want to do what they want to do?
Yes. Well, they wanted to finish their collection of skulls because mother issues.
Yes, and that's a perfectly fine reason, because you have to give motives to the goals.
Right.
Simply saying the ex-villain was trying to do blah, 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 without saying why, it's meaningless.
Yes, going back to our mad scientist who wants to make humans stronger and improve them, they could have lost a child.
Yeah, they could have seen their wife die tragically.
Yeah.
They could have their own infirmities.
Right.
You know?
That they want to better them themselves through experimentation on others.
It could be dealing with their own mortality issues.
Yeah.
It could be anything. So yeah, giving a why to it makes them much more compelling as a villain.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I just remembered that the year that we did the parents who had lost the kids. And so the villain was trying to replace their kids with anyone who came through the haunt.
Yeah.
And you wrote it in such a way, it was beautifully crafted, that the villain, that the children they were trying to replace was whatever age the customer was.
Basically, if I recall correctly, and this may be partially incorrect, the parents lost their kids very young, but they refused to accept it.
Right.
And so every year around the kids' birthdays,
they're which happened to be Halloween.
Happened to be Halloween, yes. Conveniently, that was convenient.
Yes.
They would kidnap children and force them into this birthday pantomime thing.
Right.
And I can only imagine the crying little brats and they're screaming their heads off after being kidnapped and forced into a birthday party that wasn't theirs.
Right.
And then force them to do this giant pantomime, and then afterwards, they sort of freaked out and got rid of them.
Well, they would kill them in the same way their kids died, so that they would relive that horrible day over and over and over every year.
It was their way of dealing with deep psychological trauma that put others in horrible danger.
Right.
Yeah. So basically, it comes down to answering the question, why, which too few villains have a good why behind them.
Yeah.
All right. Number four. The villain must be capable. I cannot say this one loudly enough. You cannot have a bumbling or stupid villain that never succeeds.
No.
An incompetent villain cannot harm the hero, i.e. the customers.
Right.
And therefore, there's no harm, there's no danger, there's no fear.
Right.
If this is a Scooby-Doo villain, they can't even catch a dog and its four friends.
Right.
Then, I'm not very scared of them.
Right. Yeah, the backstory for your character should include how they've been getting away with this for years and years.
And the haunt itself can emphasize this, too.
Right.
There are a couple of, I think it might have been House of Shock, actually, had a kidnapper's room.
Yeah.
Kidnapper sequence, and you go in there, and what do you see in cages? People!
Yeah.
Proving that this person has been very capable of kidnapping people and putting them in cages.
Right. 13th Gate also has that. They have several haunts use that.
But the point is, you can show that the villain has been successful before.
Right.
And one way we did this previously, going back to the Kane's collection and the skulls, was we had the collection of aforementioned skulls that showed he had successfully done this 25 times.
Yeah.
The 26 being the letter of whoever was going to the... God, that was so beautiful.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite thing we've done in the haunt in terms of just sheer evil genius.
Right.
Because that messed with a lot of people so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so funny considering how fake those skulls looked back then. They were not very realistic skulls.
No.
But anyways, you cannot have an incompetent villain. Your villain must be successful at what they're doing, and you have to convince the customer that if they are to escape, they are the exception.
Right. Not the rule.
Yeah. And what that means is that the villain has to win sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Most of the time, even.
Right.
The villain has to win. All right. Number five. And this is probably the hard one, guys. I'm not even going to attempt to lie on this one. The villain must be enjoyable. I know we keep making wrestling references, but this one's a good example of it. There is a big difference between heel heat and go away heat.
Right.
You learn this if you watch wrestling, because there are heels that the fans love seeing because they want to see them get their ass beat.
Yes, we love to hate them.
We love to hate them. And then there are villains like, just get off my freaking TV. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Go somewhere
else. You're annoying.
You're annoying. Go somewhere else. Do something else.
I don't like your story.
There's a big difference between those two things. A villain must be entertaining and strangely, maybe even confusingly, likable.
Right.
It seems like it's a dynamic that doesn't work.
Right. Because it's, I love to hate you, and I would be sad if I didn't get to see you.
Exactly.
But I don't know why.
I am strangely entranced and affixed upon you.
Yeah.
And I can't explain why, but I want to see you get beat.
Yeah. Well, and this is something that sometimes haunts get wrong, and we've seen it locally, because in an advertisement, we saw a stock video used for the main character for the haunt that year.
Yeah.
We go, we found out that it was a stock character before we went. But
purchasable on a, I can't remember which site it was, the Avanto site.
Yeah. But
Video Jungle, I think it is, or whatever.
Yeah. But, so we went and we were taking bets. Are we going to see the character or not?
And the answer was no.
Because they were everywhere. And they weren't in the haunt. And that was such a letdown. And you just can't do that. You can't have a
video
them not
Hive
show up.
Is the site. Sorry. Okay. It was going to drive me bananas if I didn't
Video
figure it out.
Hive.
Hive.com is where you can find the stock clips. But yeah. You have to have a villain people want to see and want to spend time with. So this means you have to not make the villain just all around horrible.
Yeah.
You have to give the villain traits that makes them entertaining and makes them something people want to see. They can be charming, funny, persuasive, but they have to be something that people connect with enough to want to keep them around.
Right.
Because, the best villains are in the end are the ones you enjoy seeing, even though you hate their guts or you fear them so much.
Right.
And look at the best horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Myers, Freddy, all those characters. Yeah, they're the villains, but people love them.
Yeah.
They fear them, but they love them.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to create, is that type of experience. And the final one, and this is much easier, is that the villain must be unbeatable.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds crazy, but if you want to keep reusing the same villain, they can never be truly beaten.
Yeah.
Great villains like great heroes will fall, they'll come up short, they'll have missteps, but they never give up. Heroes are basically the antithesis of villains. They share the same traits and the determination of the heroes, but they're villains.
Yeah.
And in this case, the villains, like when you escape that haunt, when you make it out the exit, you have to know that, yeah, you won, but they're not truly defeated.
Right.
They're
They've still got
back.
A whole line of people out there that they can
There's
do
a whole
stuff.
Line of people. They're coming back next year. It's not over.
Yeah.
You know that villain is going to come back again.
Right.
Any villain that can be conquered has an expiration date, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You're just waiting for the right hero to come along and vanquish them. That's not nearly as scary. So, you have to make a villain that can either be victorious in defeat or is an even bigger threat after being defeated.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's probably easier to make one that's victorious in defeat. Okay, you got away. That's fine. That's great. But look what I have here.
Yeah.
The horror and the terror is not over, you know?
Right. Or, you know, I will be ready for you next time you come through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to build this bigger, badder thing to catch you.
I've learned where this is part of my experiment type thing.
Exactly.
Exactly. Something like that.
Be Gladys.
Yeah. The main thing you're trying to do is to create a terrifying villain that people want to see and will come back to year after year after year.
Right.
Because even if they don't necessarily come there the first year for this villain, if you give them a great villain to connect with, it gives them a reason to come back the next year.
Yeah.
All right, so real quickly, we've got about 5 more minutes here of time, so to speak. Got plenty of time to get through the rest of this. Putting it together, the villain should have, one, a memorable, marketable name. Two, should be have a distinct and easy-to-spot appearance. And three, should be a three-dimensional character that connects with the audience. Combining those things can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. In a haunted attraction, as we said in the beginning, you have to do this a little bit backwards. You have to start by focusing on the name and the look, because that is what everyone is guaranteed to see.
Yeah.
They might not read your backstory, they may not get your backstory, but they will see and talk to and see the name of this character. So if those things are good, it can create unease even without the backstory. So focus on making a villain that creates that unease, that tension without the backstory, then tack the backstory onto that.
Right.
But in the end, remember that building a backstory and building a proper villain character is free. And for those who do take an interest in it and those who do study it, it can add a great deal to the haunt.
Yeah. Yes, it's pick your level of involvement.
Yeah.
Do you want to just see what's scary and know that it's scary on sight? Or do you want to know why it's scary?
Yeah. And the people that come to your haunt are going to pick their own level, and it might be varied.
Yeah.
I know from my experience at our haunt, our level of engagement for the average customer is probably pretty low.
Yeah.
Because we're a free haunt, and I know a lot of people choose to show up at the last minute.
Right.
But I also know for some paid haunts, there's a lot more discussion. I have heard people, like when we're at the mortuary, talking about the backstory there.
Yeah.
So, because people are paying, they're planning their visit, there's more thought going into it. Right. So, something to consider is that maybe the cost of the haunt has a role in determining how involved your customers will be. It makes sense. People tend to investigate bigger purchases more.
Yeah.
And 4 tickets can be a big purchase. So, mm-hmm. You know, don't knock it. All right. So, some additional and final thoughts on this. Do you put your villain front of house or inside the haunt?
And that's a good question, because if you put them inside and you want them to be back year after year, then it could go stale. You got to be careful with that.
Yeah. Well, front of house, to me, enables more engagement with customers. They can talk to people. They can banter. They can back and forth.
Exactly.
They can scare them out there a little bit. But inside does allow them to be used for a proper scare. You can set something up, mm-hmm. and they can knock it down. In our experience, or at least my experience, I'm not going to speak for you, the front of house is better, mm-hmm. because that engagement makes the rest of the haunt much more intense. Your villain has a chance to set up everything that happens in the haunt.
Right.
And make it much more intense. Now, some haunts I know, like we've seen this at 13th Gate, and we've seen this in a couple other places, will have the villain banter outside, but also slip in the back and do scares in there too.
Right.
It's very hard without 2 costumes for the villain to be in 2 places at once.
It is.
Something to think about. But the point of the matter is, if you have to choose one, I personally think front of house is better, because this is about creating a deeper character.
Right.
And it's going to be hard to get that across in a room that the customer may only spend 10 seconds in, 15 seconds in.
It is. And it also allows you to grow the character year after year, so that people will want to come back just to see that character.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, like Terror in the Coast, we mentioned them, they had their villain, big villain, inside.
Yeah.
And like 3/4 the way through, even. It's kind of a weird placement now that I think about it.
Yeah, I don't even remember who their big villain was.
It was the clown dude in the bowler hat. It was in the...
Yeah, not ringing any bells.
The mind paint? Okay, never mind. The point, this drives home the point I was about to make, which is that the villains inside the haunt are not significantly scarier than other actors.
Right.
Because they're not doing that engagement. They're not adding anything significant to it other than your regular scare actors. So, something to think about. And the next question I think a lot of people are going to have is, do you make this the face of your haunt or not? My question would be, is it the most distinctive part of your haunt?
Yeah.
If so, probably.
And is it the most distinctive recurring part?
Yes.
Because I think that's an important...
Like, looking locally, the mortuary always uses the building.
Yeah.
Because it's very distinctive.
Yeah.
It's the most distinctive part. But the House of Shock, when it was open, always used, you know...
Belial.
Always used Lord Belial. Because he was super distinctive.
Right.
So, yeah, think about what's unique to your haunt and what is going to be most likely to drive customers. Bottom line, wrapping it up, because, you know, we're pretty much out of time.
Yeah.
A great villain is easy to add and can help customers get more out of your haunt. Basically, make your villain someone they want to see, someone they want to conquer, someone they want to see lose. Mm-hmm. And be sure that your villain can never truly be defeated, so that way you can reuse them year after year as you choose. Do that. Take your villain to the next level. and watch the customers who do wish to get invested in your story enjoy it that much more.
Yeah.
I think it's that simple.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot to go over.
Yeah, it's that simple.
It's that simple. Just do this list of things we talked about for the past 40 minutes and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm an arrogant prick, aren't I?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But anyways, the point remains. Adding a compelling villain is fundamentally free.
Right.
Other than possibly the costuming work you have to do, this is something you can do for very little money, and it can make your haunt much more compelling and much more memorable.
Right.
We have people come back for Bernie every year.
Yeah.
They like seeing me dance and jive in front of the line for some reason. I don't get it either, okay?
You're a different person when you're
Bernie.
Yes,
I am. But the point remains, adding that can add a great deal to your haunt.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, everyone, we have to wrap this up. Thank you very much for spending the past hour with us. May God have mercy on your souls and your questionable decision-making skills. But we do appreciate it. If you want more, definitely check us out at hauntweekly.com. We are Haunt Weekly on Twitter and Facebook. Follow us, like us, and all the things there. tinyurl.com/hauntweekly takes you to our YouTube channel where you can subscribe to us. Be sure to click the little notification bell if you do, so you'll be notified when new episodes go there. They go at pretty much the same time as they do on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Google Play, wherever finer podcasts are sold. That's the other places you can find us. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, talking about creating a haunt villain. We'll see you guys next time.